Today's Animal Spirits is brought to you by our friends at Y-Charts. Michael, typical day in the life of a financial advisor.
Yoga.
Back-to-back client meetings.
Meditation.
So I financial planning meetings, prospecting. I didn't say
wow,
that.
Wow,
right.
Prospecting.
Yeah. Portfolio management, operations. So Y-Charts has a tool that can help save time. This is a hack.
Many tools.
So Y-Charts reporting and portfolio tools can help save time. We use it all the time. Just help save us time for this very podcast. Clients want to hear from their advisors. You can't just be a person behind the scenes. So very user-friendly templates. With ours, we have the Animal Spirits logo in there. Could put your own wealth management logo in there if you want. You can do proposals of current portfolio versus prospective portfolio. Educating clients is a huge part of being a financial advisor. If you want to join Y-Charts and the thousands of other users, tell them Animal Spirits sent you. Get 20% off that first subscription. Go to Y-Charts.com.
Today's show is brought to you by Crane Shares. Ben, you and I spoke with Jonathan Shellam, the COO of Crane Shares, talking about the Chinese economy, real estate, what's going on, their version of the GFC. We spoke about finding a bottom potentially. We spoke about the buffered ETFs.
Yes. Good talk, your book. Check that out. It is interesting to think about China in the aspect of great financial crisis because they're down even, their stock market is down even more than we were for the GFC. So in some, I guess, depending on what area of the market, but especially the tech focused side of stuff is down what, 60, 70, 80%?
Yeah, it's not great.
And so we were talking about finding a bottom there. It's interesting to think about that, and especially in light of the US doing so well. So go check out our talk with Jonathan from Crane Shares. That's our talk, your book, and then go to craneshares.com for more.
Welcome to Animal Spirits, a show about markets, life, and investing. Join Michael Batnick and Ben Carlson as they talk about what they're reading, writing, and watching. All opinions expressed by Michael and Ben are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Ritholtz Wealth Management. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any investment decisions. Clients of Ritholtz Wealth Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Welcome to Animal Spirits with Michael and Ben. Before we get the show started, I've got a little housekeeping announcement. Myself and Josh are doing a live Compound and Friends in Los Angeles, California. When are we doing it?
The two most LA guys I know.
What does that mean? What is that, a shot?
No, you guys are East Coast New York. Like, you're the complete opposite of LA.
Fair.
Is that fair?
Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. It is, where is this event? It's Rolling Green San Mateo, sick venue. You're probably not familiar with it. You're not a Los Angeles guy like I am. We've got two guests that we're not announcing yet, but it's gonna be a lot of fun. The show is, doors open at 5:30. Show starts at 6:15. There's going to be whores, divorce, cocktail hour. It's going to be wonderful. Tuesday, April 30th, link in bio or show notes, wherever you could find it. We'll see you there.
I know it's a French word, but that's easily one of the worst spelled words in the world.
It's impossible.
Right? Yes.
Admittedly, I had to Google it.
And if you sign up for the Compound newsletter, maybe you figure out who those guests are in advance.
Oh, okay. There you go. Right? That's a plug. Ben, you're looking good. You're looking fresh. You're looking young. Did you dye your hair?
I think it's just dark from being in here. No, I've not dyed my hair. I shave. Maybe that's it.
Oh yeah, you got rid of the gray in your beard and the blue in the shirt, the purple, it brings out the eyes. You look great.
It's a new Tropical Brothers Hotness. This is their new release for this year, I think.
That is very nice.
I'm in Marco Island for spring break with the kids, and I have a few economic thoughts from my trip here.
Dude, you are just spraying inflation all over the United States.
all over the globe lately. I think, but that inflation piece, this is what I wanted to talk about. So I gave you the JW Marriott that's here. It's a really well-known resort on Marco Island. It feels like a Caribbean resort. It's huge. It's got all these pools and restaurants and
wait, are you staying there?
No, we're staying at a Airbnb.
Right, okay.
So we went to the JW, but we talked to friends who stayed there, and So the first time I went there was 2018. My wife and I went, and it was still pretty reasonably priced. Like, it wasn't that bad. Then we went a couple of years later after the pandemic. I think it was 2022 we went, maybe last year. And you could definitely tell the prices had gone up a lot.
A lot.
And I think you went, and that's in like, I don't know, 4 or 5 short years, the prices. But I think this helps explain the U.S. economy, because I feel like a lot of these businesses realized, like, wait a minute, we actually have pricing power here. If we jack up rates, people are going to, they're going to be mad about it, but they're still going to pay. And I think for people who have money, it stings to pay more, but they're still going to do it.
So I'm taking the family to California before our recording. My wife is a saint. She is traveling back to New York with the boys. I'm going to be staying for our work event. And we looked at the JW.
Yeah, you owe her big time for
that. Yeah, I do.
Two kids on a plane.
We looked at the JW as a destination. And my God, did it get expensive. I can't remember what the rates were, but I was like, holy, no way. I'm not, no.
So we heard from some friends who stayed at the JW here. And they had, you can't fit more than 4 in a room. So they had to do 2 rooms because they have a big family. And the number they threw out for a week there, that doesn't include plane tickets or the food, is now way more expensive. So they actually fixed up the little bar that's right on the beach there, you know, Quinn's, really great hot spot. But the food prices are like what you'd see at a really nice restaurant in New York.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
But it was overflowing with people and they're still paying. So I think that helps explain the U.S. economy. Like, all these businesses realize, like, oh, wait a minute. These schmucks will still pay. We don't care. We're going to keep jacking up prices and they'll still, and there's a ceiling eventually, but I feel like a lot of these businesses are going to try to figure out what that ceiling is. And the U.S. consumer is going to say, this stinks, but I'm still going to pay it.
I think you're describing what happened the last 2 years. Like, they did that.
Yes. Yes.
That's inflation.
Yeah.
Ben discovers inflation.
Well, no, people always get mad at me in the comments because I don't complain enough about inflation. This is me complaining about inflation, but I think it's, The corporations are taking advantage of us, though. And we're not smart enough to figure it out. One of the things we've talked about a lot in the last couple months here is and we heard from a lot of people that the home insurance rates are so astronomical in Florida. And from afar, you think, why would people continue to pay those rates? And then you come here and you go, oh, I get it. Like, if you were a baby boomer in your golden years for retirement, you're going to roll the dice. You don't care, right? You're going to spend that extra money or take that hurricane risk. You don't give a crap.
Well, I think, not to pick at the scab, but to say like, oh, why do people live there? It's like, well, what do you mean? People live there. They live there because they were born there. They're raised there. They have family there. They've been in a house for 13 years. What, they're just supposed to leave?
But my point is that—
That's a different cohort than people that are moving there.
Yes, a huge migration to the state, which I think— Baby boomers, this is my take for the next like 15, 20, 25 years. Baby boomers are going to put a floor under prices in every nice location in the country.
Oh yeah. There will be a premium on beachfront, on vacation homes for
Sun,
a long
water,
time.
Sun, water, night. Yeah. Like, any of those places are going to have a floor under prices.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, someone once told me that his great, this is like a guy who's in his 70s. The best financial advice I ever got is a beach house never goes down in value. You could poke holes in that maybe. It's probably true.
It's probably fair. Come on. Yeah. I'm sure there have been beach houses at lost value, but 60% of the time, it works every time.
I have some more travel anecdotes later, but I'm only halfway through my trip, so I'll save some.
Okay. So, rest in peace, Danny Kahneman. He referred to himself, I think, as the grandfather of behavioral finance. He gave the father nod to Dick Thaler. He was an absolute giant. Changed the way that we thought about investing, the psychology of all that.
It's hard to believe a lot of those original papers were written in like the 1970s. Yeah. I know he's got some, but like he did this behavioral finance stuff before any of us even thought about it.
Is that are you in New York?
We've been trying to figure out, there's a fire station not that far from our place, but we're trying, there's sirens nonstop here. And it's kind of morbid to think about, but I'm wondering if it's a lot of like heart attacks from old people.
Yeah.
Right? Try to bring the mood down.
Jason Zweig wrote a beautiful tribute in the Wall Street Journal. I just want to read some of his words. He said, why do we sell our... So these are Kahneman's insights. Why do we sell our winners too soon and hang on to our losers too long? Why don't we realize that most hot streaks are just luck? Why do we say we have a high tolerance for risk and then suffer the torments of the demand when the market falls? Why do we ignore the odds when we know they're stacked against us? And these are I think the economics profession, industry assumed before Kahneman came around that human beings were what they would call rational agents, that we would always act as the spreadsheet would say in our
self-interest. That's what I learned in my economics classes in college.
And the minute you buy a stock or have any sort of money on the line, you realize, oh, that's all nonsense.
So I wrote about this. My biggest Kahneman takeaway is always, so Jason wrote about this. So he said, no, Dan, he said, money isn't the same. Money loss isn't the same as money gained. Losses are twice as painful as gains. And that concept to me, I think that's the most important concept in finance, how losses get people to overreact and panic and change the way that they invest. Mm-hmm. I think that whole thing, his whole piece of losses sting twice as bad as gains make us feel good, is so prevalent in so many areas of life. And I think that to me is his like biggest insight. The other one I thought
was— Wait, hold on. I want to stick with that. This is why bear markets are so, so dangerous. You spoke about money loss being twice as powerful as the feeling of when you win an equivalent amount. With bear markets, I'm making it up. It's 10 to 1, right? Like bear markets ruin investors forever. And that's why it's important not to poo-poo them as, and I don't think we're guilty of this. In fact, we're not guilty of this, but like to just say like, oh, it's part of investing. Like, yeah, of course it is. We know that.
Just stay the course. Right, that simple.
Yeah, just stay the course. No, it's not that simple. Because bear markets, like it stays with people. It wipes them out. It makes them impossible to recover from. And that's why, not to lecture here, but it's so important. Like now is a great time to prepare for the eventual bear market. And that's not like a warning or anything, but like there's always an eventual bear market, right? And the time to panic is not in it. It's to put guardrails in place because we know that we're going to do stupid shit because we're human beings. That's the takeaway.
I always like to say that you should hold as much stocks in your portfolio as you'd be willing to hold during a bull market and a bear market. Like, so yeah, you're right. Now is the time to prepare for it. You don't go looking for the black swan fund or have more cash in bonds after the bear market already happened, which is a lot of times how people think about it. But think, we're in a pretty good bull market right now.
We're in a great bull
market. No one's going to remember these feelings, right? In 2 years when it's over, whenever it ends. But when the bear market is here, people will remember that. That's the whole idea behind it.
That's so true. Yeah. Everyone can recite the bear market's chapter and verse. Even if they were bear markets that you didn't even live through, right? You know them from the textbooks. Who remembers the bull markets? Yeah, we talk about the dot-com bubble. But outside of that,
yeah, people talk about speculative behavior. They don't talk about the good parts about bull markets. His other one, he said, the most important question to ask before making a decision is what is the base case? That I think is another one that you don't have to be 100% certain about something, but you can say, this usually happens, so I'm going to assume it's going to continue happening until the facts change.
Yeah.
One more thing about this. Jason Zweig wrote about in his piece about how he helped Kahneman write Thinking Fast and Slow. And I didn't realize this until years and years later that he helped edit and publish the book. And he said he had a panic attack, two-thirds of the way through the book and didn't help him finish it. And I just don't think he's such a humble guy. I don't think he gets enough credit for helping create one of the biggest, best books ever on behavioral finance.
You could, no disrespect to Kahneman. I mean, obviously legend, rest in peace, all that good stuff. But you could tell when Jason stopped writing. You could tell when Jason stopped working on the book.
It went a little long. I don't know how many people actually finished it. If I had my copy here, you'd see I have dog-eared a million pages in it. You know, it's a very long book.
You know the drawing of the horse turning into a donkey?
Yes.
Speaking of that, dream scenario. So
it's like Seinfeld about Larry, it's like Seinfeld about Larry David when he left the last two seasons.
I didn't get to the last two seasons of Seinfeld.
This is a big point of emphasis for me. People always say that Seinfeld went out on top. He went on top because they were paying a lot of money, but the last two seasons of Seinfeld were
okay. Dream scenario was a bit of a horse and a donkey. Still a good movie worth watching.
Oh, the Nicolas Cage.
And there's two great cameos in there. Michael Cera and Cousin Greg.
I think the fact that you got half or two-thirds of a good movie out of Nicolas Cage these days, that's a win.
Oh, no. The first half was vintage Nick Cage.
Okay. I think that's a win, just to get half of a good—
like Leaving Las Vegas Cage. All right. Somebody emailed us. Hey, Michael and Ben, in honor of the end of Q1, I made a list of all the things that the social media and stock market TV perma bears warned us about. coming into 2024, but that did not, in the end, send us into a correction, much less break anything. These were all things that were on the calendar and were supposed to happen in Q1. It's hard to remember all of them now, but here goes. So thank you, Kim, for the email. We turned his list into a chart with the help of our chart wizard, Matt. So here it goes. All the things that happened in Q1. By the way, 10% quarter. Not bad.
That is great. The stock market's already up double digits.
Pretty damn good. All right. People were really worried about the Microsoft earnings and guidance, right? This is after
the most important earnings call ever.
Most important earnings call ever. Then there was the Treasury's QRA. Oh man, I honestly forget what that stands for. Qualified repurchase agreement? I don't know, maybe something like that. Who knows?
It might have mattered for like 6 hours.
Who's to say? The NVIDIA earnings and guidance, that honestly was the Super Bowl of earnings. They blew it out. Bank of Japan ends negative rates. And then the FOMC meeting.
I feel like the Bank of Japan has ended negative rates like 16 times already. Doesn't that happen a lot?
And then the token quarter end pension fund rebalancing.
Ah, the rebalance. So we've obviously been climbing the wall of worry, which it always sort of happens. It's funny. I've heard from a few people lately saying Michael and Ben are way too rose-colored glasses, Goldilocks, and saying everything is great. We talked about Roaring 20s last week, and someone said, listen, your takes are not going to age well, which is like the ultimate bear thing to say.
No takes age well. This is the internet. This is talking. Everything ages poorly. Except, you know what ages really well? Our 2023 no recession bull market call. That aged pretty well. Did it not?
Good call. Credit to us. But my whole thinking is we can say things are good now with the understanding that they're probably going to be bad in the future at some point. That doesn't mean that this stuff we're saying, things are good now. It's true. That doesn't take away from the fact that bad things are going to happen in the future.
So listen. There is so much negativity in the world. And I don't need to put negativity out into the world when things are okay. Sorry, that's not me. That's not us. That's not us. If you come here to say for the world is ending, this is going to end badly, the deficit is funding the rally. Sorry, that's not us. We're gonna call it like it is. And when the economy turns and when the market turns, we're going to say, yeah, things are tough.
We'll talk about that too.
We'll talk about that too.
It is kind of crazy. We just had a bear market that we were underwater for 2 years, basically. But look at this chart. This is admittedly cherry-picked, but it's sometimes like cherry-picking statistics. It's just me. The S&P is up 150% since the bottom in 2020. March 23rd marked the bottom, 2020. It's up 150% and 25% annualized. And we had a bear market in there. This has been an insane run. That's a bear market leading into that, obviously, 35% correction, and then a bear market. But it's a crazy, crazy number.
We had a crazy number. We had a crazy run, no doubt.
Yes. Riddle me this. Yeah. I want to just talk about this. I was thinking about this because I saw people posting on. I'm kind of staying away from social media and stuff. Checking occasionally. I was checking it during the Iowa LSU game last night. You probably didn't watch women's college basketball. False.
I came home last night. From a dinner with a celebrity, not to brag, you'll hear about it next week. And I turned on the game. And Robin goes, why are you watching this? You never watch women's basketball. I said, hello, Caitlin Clark, kind of a big deal.
My daughter is the biggest Caitlin Clark fan ever. Is she a bandwagon fan? Maybe. But don't tell her I said that. She's got like the Caitlin Clark jerseys and shirts. And she's watched like literally every game this season. So I've watched more women's college basketball than I've watched in my life. And the game was absolutely amazing. So I was following on social media. So I saw people posting that gold is hitting all-time highs. This is crazy. I don't know that you could have...
Wait, hold on. What does gold have to do with Caitlin Clark?
That was the one time I was on social media. People were tweeting about gold during the Iowa game for some reason. So we're always really good at retrofitting narratives after the fact. But think about this. This year alone, stocks all-time highs, gold all-time highs, Bitcoin all-time highs with 5% T-bill yields. What scenario would that have ever made sense ever 2 or 3 years ago, where you could say, listen, in 2024, stocks, gold, Bitcoin are going to break out and you're going to have 5% T-bill yields.
I got to be honest. I don't know what's going on. And I'm happy to say that because doesn't gold respond to like real negative rates? Like, isn't that good for gold? So we've got real positive rates. In fact, you have the 10-year breaking out. You've got the dollar ripping. Shouldn't this be bearish for gold? And yet, go figure. I don't know what's going on, Ben. I can't explain it.
That's the thing. Gold is supposed to follow real. If real yields rise, that's supposed to be bad for gold because it doesn't pay dividend or earnings or anything like that. And it's when real yields fall, that's supposed to be good for gold. And I don't know. All right.
Is gold is gold saying that inflation is going to come back? I don't know, but gold didn't do well the last inflationary run. Gold did shit, right? Am I wrong? In 2022?
Is gold a risk? Maybe Bitcoin like broke the severed the ties of gold for macroeconomic relationships. I don't know. Getting back to my idea of corporations taking advantage of inflation and being good for corporations. Kathy Jones tweeted this. Corporate profits rose to new all-time highs in Q4 of 2023. Obviously, some of this is inflation, the profits, but look at corporate profits.
It's so far above trend, probably even if you adjust for inflation. They're really good at making money.
Yes. That's like, if you, any of the despair stuff you want to talk about, headwinds and stuff, but corporations are really, really good at this. Like, I just can't imagine being a long-term bear against the stock market. I could never understand that posture.
Ben, have you can't avoid like the price of chocolate, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like this happens once every 3 to 6 months where there is a certain commodity and they show the price chart and people joke about it and they say, take me somewhere. My wife said, take me somewhere expensive, and they show the chocolate or whatever.
Javier Blas had a good thread. All right. The price is, cocoa prices have surged more than 250% over the last year, $10,000 per metric ton, nearly double the record highs at 46 years ago. So the long-term chart looks like most long-term charts, and then whoosh, it's going straight up. This is unusual. There's a historic shortfall, so that's what's part of what's driving it.
Is it weather or what?
The cocoa market will suffer a large deficit in 2024 for the third consecutive crop season, the most pronounced shortfall in modern history. So more buyers and sellers, or more buyers and growers, or whatever. So part of it is weather. Just really wild stuff.
I was going to mention this in my recommendations, but I talked about bananas being so cheap a couple weeks ago, and a bunch of people said, you got to read The Fish That Ate the Whale.
Great book.
By Rich Cohen, the book about the banana trade. And they talk about how the weather was so bad at one point in like the late 1800s that there was a year without bananas, and how that like scarred people for life back then. But that book is... that's one of the better business books I read in a long time. But I feel like we can't have that kind of... you read it too?
Yeah.
How he like went and he trudged through South America. Like, bananas were essentially undiscovered for America. And these handful of people brought them to America. That sort of undiscovered thing like just can't happen again.
Imagine being like, I don't know, 25 years old and tasting a banana, having never... you're like, what the f*** is this?
Right. Yes. And they talk about how they knew exact amount of time it would take for them to go bad, and they'd have to bolt them up for 2 weeks. It's really an excellent book. And I think just the tone of the book, too, is very well written.
Really, really good. You know what? I've been thinking about getting back into reading. I said this to Robin yesterday. She's like, yeah, when?
That's true. It's tough. I do most of my reading on an airplane, actually. But
I took the first step, though. I put a book in my book bag, so I'm thinking about it.
The best way to do it is, I've been trying to get you on this for years. The Kindle Paperwhite is, I put it by my bedside table and I read for 20 minutes a night before I go to bed. It helps me sleep.
Yeah.
Because you can read it in the dark. All right. Larry Fink had a annual letter for BlackRock. And I pulled this piece out because I thought it was really interesting. We've talked for a few weeks. You brought up about what do you call the monetary premium in stocks for people putting money in.
Not my words, but yes.
Okay, so Larry, I never realized this. I'm going to read what you have to say. Most Japanese keep the bulk of their retirement savings in banks, earning a low interest rate. If it wasn't such a bad strategy, it wasn't such a bad strategy when Japan was suffering from deflation, but now the country's economy has turned around and the Nikkei has surged. Most aspiring retirees are missing out on the upswing. The country didn't have anything resembling a 401k program until 2001. Even then, the amount of people could contribute was quite low for income. So a decade ago, the government launched a new savings account to encourage people to spend more. And the goal is to have 34 million Japanese investors before the end of the decade. And he's saying it's going to require Japanese government to expand their capital markets. And the hope is that like we're going to have way more people investing. And it's like these other countries, I mentioned Italy last week catching up. These other countries are catching on. And they're going to say, why don't we make the stock market hold it up like a shrine like they do in the United States? And have it be part of everything we do, and it's part of the savings program.
That sounds like an easier said than, I mean, that's like a, we've been doing this for a long time.
It's a total cultural change.
Yeah.
Here's another one that I just pulled this out. By mid-century mark, 1 in 6 people globally will be over the age of 65, up from 1 in 11 in 2019. To support them, governments are going to have to prioritize building out robust capital markets like the U.S. has. Here's the other thing, though. With people living so much longer, think about how much more time to compound the baby boomers' wealth has than any other generation ever. So they're the richest generation ever. They're going to live longer than any generation, or the biggest generation ever to live that long. Their money is going to compound for longer. So that spread between how much wealth they have and how much everyone else has is going to just continue to get worse, right? The compounding effects for that wealth is going to last longer than anyone has ever had before. Because they've been saving since the early 80s when 401ks and IRAs hit the market. All right. A listener of the show sent this in to me. Mark Hadala sent this in. He said, hey, I made it into the Wall Street Journal as a commenter like you like. So I'm going to give him some credit here.
Wait, did he get fake comments? Was he like hit on it?
He gave real comments.
Okay.
No. So he said he answered a little thing saying if you have invested in NVIDIA. So he says he's a 58-year-old professor in Kirksville, Missouri. See the MO? That's Missouri, not Kansas. Heads up. He first bought NVIDIA more than 2 decades ago after a student introduced him to the company. Now, given its monster rally, he's planning to retire early next year. The stock returns have made it ridiculous to keep working. So you mentioned a couple weeks ago, like, I'm up 50, 67% of the stock. I'm out. I couldn't hold a 10 bagger.
Depends on which stock, but generally speaking, correct.
I think I'm in a similar boat as you.
Oh, by the way, hold on. You're right. I will never, ever have a 10 bagger in my entire life. Like, what's my ceiling for how big of a gain I could take? I don't know, but
it's going to be index funds for us, right? Those are going to be our 10 baggers someday.
True. Hopefully.
But what percentage of investors do you think have that ability? Because I think it's something your risk appetite or whatever in your brain is, you're just born with that. How many people have that? Because the people who held Bitcoin from like 10 cents to now it's $70,000, like those people are legitimately insane to me that they have the ability to do that.
I think, and I'm generalizing, I suspect that for most people with monster gains, they're like afraid to sell. In a good way or bad way. I guess depending on how you look at it. They're like, why would I sell NVIDIA or my Apple? Look how good it's done. I don't want to leave gains on the table. Like, why would I sell? What else am I going to buy? And I think that they have that mentality, whereas we don't for reasons that I already described.
What was the company you mentioned before? Your uncle or your cousin held for years,
right?
So you have this DNA in your family somewhere.
So I've told the story, but for newer listeners that never heard this, I write a lot, or not so much anymore, but I used to write a lot about the dangers of picking individual stocks. Just all the statistics are against you, right? Like for every NVIDIA, there's a million other stocks that are not, that just crash and burn.
Right. There's stocks that crash and just never come back. Never hit those highs
again.
So
my uncle in 1996 bought a little small biotech company called Celgene. I don't know what the market cap was at the time. I'm sure it was under $1 billion. And he bought, I don't know, $25,000 for my mom, $50,000, whatever it was. And that stock changed our life. Because my mom, when my parents got divorced, my mom went back to work. She didn't graduate college. So she was a secretary or something, you know, didn't make any money. But that stock, like, legitimately turned into $1 million. So my mother was if you bought $10,000 into...
Right.
But I remember vividly, like, when Celgene went down, like, it was a big deal. Like, that was everything that she had.
How has that stock performed in recent years? Have you looked at it lately?
It was bought by Bristol Myers.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Probably so 8 years ago or so.
So your uncle went out on top. He didn't have to, like, potentially hold it and it stagnates or goes down or whatever.
But he's a great example of why would I sell a stock that has treated me so well? I think that's the prevailing feeling for people that have giant gains.
This is going to sound like a put down and it's not. I feel like in some ways you have to like have a little, you have to be a little naive. Like we're
totally.
Like not,
this is not a diss. It's just that we know the data, right? We know base rates. We know all that stuff. And so we're incapable of holding a 10 bagger, which is fine.
Yes. The base rates have like ruined us.
Yeah. And this is one of like the big dynamics in the market over the last decade is Joe's over pros. How many retail investors have beat the shit out of professionals over the last decade thanks to the Apples and NVIDIAs of the world. A lot.
And also, how many base rates have been destroyed by these tech stocks? They took the base rates and dragged them out and beat them to death or whatever.
Smashed them against the ground. That's exactly right. You know the scene in Office Space where they're smashing the fax machine?
Yes.
That's the Magnificent Seven to base rates.
All right. I'm going to be interested to see what Duncan and John and Daniel come up with for the video for this one. Right? If you're just a listener, we have very good production value on the YouTube videos as well. All right. I, a couple weeks ago, said inflation is over, and a bunch of people said I'm an idiot. That's fair. They can think that. I looked at all the inflation rates for the G7 countries, US, UK, France, Canada, Japan, Germany, Italy. All of those rates are 3.4% or lower now for inflation rates across the globe. They all followed a very similar path. Japan is the only one that didn't really keep up on the upside. Isn't this the case for inflation kind of being over, however you want to define that? Inflation is a huge, I'm not takeaway, like, yes, I know the baseline is set higher and all that stuff, but like high rates of inflation, like 4, 5, 6%, that, I think that's—
Just to be very clear what you're talking about the 5, 6% inflation is over.
The scary high inflation, those rates I think are done.
Yeah, fine. I guess my point was, and obviously you would agree with this, is like that doesn't really matter. Of course it matters. It doesn't make anybody feel better about the price that they're paying today, right? And you would agree with that. The other part is that—
My $26 Miami Vice the other day? Yeah.
The other part is the 10-year is breaking out.
Big floater, Big floater. Sorry.
The 10-year is at the highest level since November 2023. It spiked yesterday when the ISM prices paid component came out. And WTI is breaking out. Crude oil is breaking out.
Yeah, that probably is the big risk, is commodities.
Interestingly, though, so the S&P is down 1% today. Maybe we'll finally have that the 2% pullback that we've been waiting for. But it is kind of remarkable that like stocks are sort of kind of barely responding to higher rates.
Right, and
I mean, the S&P is down 1% today. Big deal after this run. You would expect that, you know, could give a little bit more back.
Yeah, it happens. Okay, so I think my easiest call for the year was consumer sentiment is going to break out. It just broke out to a new high for the first, like, high since early 2021. It's almost lapped those. But if you look at this, wasn't COVID just the big reset? And I know we've talked forever about, like, the reason sentiment is so bad. But, I mean, if you just look at how bad it fell during COVID, is that a simple explanation for sentiment, that whole period just reset sentiment lower?
No, it was inflation.
Look at how big the consumer sentiment dropped in 2020, though.
You know, of course. Yes, there was a gigantic drop in consumer sentiment, as you would expect when the economy shuts down. And then there was a hell of a rebound. And then once inflation kicked in, the bottom fell out. Interestingly, though, we're having this uptick while gasoline prices are coming back. A lot of people were saying, like, the consumer sentiment is just gas prices. We'll see. If gas prices continue to rise, I'll be interested to see what happens to consumer sentiment. All right, this is a great chart from Bank of America. TSA 7-day moving average, millions of passengers. And 2024, way higher than pre-pandemic, way higher than even last year at this time. I don't understand. I mean, Ben, I know you're flying. I'm flying in 2 weeks. I thought that we were going to get the travel out of our system. It's really remarkable. I could not have foreseen this coming.
Well, the other thing people said was, listen, business travel is impacted forever because of work from home. No one's going to travel for business anymore. That was like the
easy
one.
How wrong we were.
Somehow, though, I want to have this week for spring break every year because we're in like a lull between like spring break was, a lot of the spring break just happened and there's more coming. Like yours is in a couple weeks, right?
Mine is in two, 3 weeks.
Ours is, it's not that busy right now. The travel actually wasn't that busy for me, which was kind of nice because I think we're in like a middle ground of spring break.
Know what I just earned, Ben? Speaking of travel, silver medallion on Delta, not to brag.
Okay.
It's the first medallion.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I've had that for a while. Do you not have the Delta card?
Of course I do. I'm a late bloomer to the Delta card. I only got it like a year or so ago.
All right. So here's a question for you. And I'm not judging anyone who does this, but I think I could never do it. So we're taking our flight down and we're in like row 30, whatever, you know, because you have five people. Kids in first class. There was two kids sitting in first class on the way to spring break. What do you think about kids in first class? Because my thought is I could never do it because I do not want to expose my kids to having that once and then taking it away. And then they're going to go like, wait, why, you know, but so what are your thoughts on kids in first class? Because I could see it maybe like, I don't know, you're taking a trip to Europe or something and you want to sit in nicer, but I could never expose my kids to that to give them the taste of it.
Okay. I don't want to judge, but that being said, I'm 100% with you.
Okay.
I even feel weird that I'm taking my kids so many places. Like I, yes. So growing up, we were not a plain traveling family. I know a lot of families in my town that went to Aruba. I never went to a tropical place until I was like in my 20s, maybe. So we were car trip people, right? We drove to Washington, we drove to Boston and Philly and things like that. So no, I don't want to expose my kids to first class.
Trips are way bigger these days than when we were growing up. That's for sure.
Yeah.
People go further I agree. I feel like my kids are already spoiled enough as it is. I can't imagine putting them on first class and how entitled they would feel. Again, not judging. That's just personal.
No, we don't judge here. Two more things on the travel. One, if you're flying into New York, LaGuardia, no more JFK. I'm done with JFK. LaGuardia it's so much better.
I flew back through JFK from Italy, and you're right. It was awful. Awful experience.
Oh, it's very...
And the new LaGuardia is so nice. They did a great
beautiful.
Job with that.
Yeah. Last week, you spoke about you were disparaging Delta about the movie selection. I was like, what are you talking about? I just flew, and there was like 97 movies. On the way back from Colorado, Ben, I was on a Delta plane with like the smaller movie screen, like the old one. And I was surprised to see there was only like 15 movies.
Okay. No, but I had a lot, but I just, maybe it's because I've seen everything. There's no new good movies. I want new stuff. That maybe I'm more complaining about the movie industry than Delta. I just think they need to have Netflix. I think they have Paramount Plus or something on there, but just put Netflix and Prime and HBO, put all my streaming stuff on there. I know you can do it on the iPad, but the Wi-Fi never works.
All right, Ben, I want to ask you what's going on in the labor market. Connor Sen tweeted, we've been in a rolling recession for white-collar hiring. Kind of wonder if this dynamic similar to other bullwhip credit-sensitive industry downturns that we've seen, and it picks up later this year just because it has to. And he's looking at professional and business service hires rates. So I think what this is showing is hires as a percentage of employees. I believe that's what it is. Interestingly, Vanguard had a similar study. Our Vanguard 401k data indicates that hiring rates for the bottom third of workers who make below $55,000 per year are generally higher than those for higher income workers. And then they say, while hiring rates for high income workers are slowing, we have not seen a material pickup in the unemployment rate for that income group. We've seen layoff announcements for high income workers, most notably in the technology sector, but they've often been able to quickly find new employment as their skills are in demand. So I think that the lower end, whether it's middle or bottom third or whatever, of workers having a very strong labor market with real wages increasing pretty rapidly has been a huge boost to the economy because those people spend every dollar they make.
Yes. I had a friend try to make the case to me that upper middle class people have gotten the shaft in the last 5 to 10 years. Because they're paying maybe higher taxes and the people who are way better, more money than them are doing a lot better. But the people on the lower end have been brought up because wages have come up. I would not go that far to say that. But
well, you could think that. You probably shouldn't say it out loud.
Yes. But I think this is maybe something. So it's these blue collar jobs, I guess, that are booming and higher wages. And the, like you said, the white collar middle manager job, I guess, is that fair to say that has been falling off a little bit? That is interesting. I don't have a good explanation for
it. Well, think about who the technology companies were cutting, or just generally.
Oh, true.
Where do companies cut where they're trying to? They cut the fat, and the fat is middle management. Hey, you're making $140,000 a year. Like, what are you?
We did hear from someone in the YouTube comments last week. I still go in the comments every week. Michael's never looked. I'm just throwing it out
listen,
there.
Listen. Of course I look. There are several reasons why I don't. One is I don't think it's natural to reach strangers just flinging shit at your face. I don't want to have strangers ruin my day.
90% of it is positive or jokes, and the other 10%.
I'm sure it is. But more importantly than that, in all seriousness, I don't want what I'm, maybe I'm peeling back the curtain too much on this. I don't want what I'm saying to be influenced by one person in the back of my head.
True.
Because I got, for the rest of the audience who's like, what, the, who is he even talking to? I don't want to talk to people. I don't want comments in the back of my head as I'm trying to entertain and educate our audience.
Fair? Is that a subtweet towards me?
No, it's just, no, the
I'm kidding.
No, we can move on.
No, but someone in the comments was saying that, like, listen, I work in the tech field and it's kind of brutal out there with the layoffs and they were saying, like, it's, people think that tech is awesome, but like a certain subset of people in that industry, he's like, it's pretty tough. So I kind of get that. All right. So I saw this stat the other day. Someone posted on Twitter, 1/3 of all purchases are being done in cash right now. And you hear that number and you go, gosh, that just doesn't sound fair. It's boomers, blah, blah, blah. But I clicked through the source data for Redfin and look at the chart here. This is homes purchased with cash where there's no mortgage loan information on the deed. That's how they define cash.
I don't understand. I just don't understand.
It's been roughly, it got as low as 20%, but that was briefly in the pandemic. But it's been around 1/3 since 2011.
And the median home—
It's almost constant.
The median home price is what, 400 something thousand?
Yes.
Where's all this cash coming from? People selling their NVIDIA?
So they also put in here, they said, while housing is expensive, affluent Americans who can pay in cash are more likely than lower-income Americans to be the ones buying. All cash home sales rose 3% year-over-year in February, where mortgaged home sales fell 3%. This is just the housing price, how expensive it's gotten, is going to make wealth inequality worse because the young people who are going to be able to afford to buy in these expensive areas are going to get help from their parents. Like the wealth transfer is going to happen faster, right? They're going to say, listen, mom and dad, I don't want my inheritance in 30 years when you pass away. I want it now. Help me buy a house.
Wealth inequality, it's a one-way train. It's never going to get better.
It really isn't. And the thing is, people always pointed out that like it's bad. It's always been bad.
It's always been bad.
Unfortunately, yeah. It really has. So I also think if and when rates fall, I would have thought mortgage rates would have fallen more by now. I can't believe they've stayed at 7% this long. Three people I know that I've talked to in the last 2 or 3 months are doing massive remodeling projects on their house. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, had to move to a different floor or like grandparents' house to like redo. And they're pulling that equity out. I think when rates fall—
Dude, if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars of money that you could tap that didn't exist, you're going to do it.
And don't you think the thinking would be in that scenario, HELOC rates are like 7% now, 7.5%. But if rates fall and the Fed cuts, those rates are going to fall too because those are market rates. But I think when those rates fall, we're going to see, even if you got to like 5%, the cash out refinance boom is going to be massive. We've gone from like $10 trillion in equity 10 years ago to 30 something now. We've added $20 trillion in equity, home equity. People are going to tap that stuff.
Bill McBride tweeted this. Single family active inventory. It's finally coming up. So 21, 22, 23. Were well. Jeez, so much below pre-pandemic levels. But it's up 26% year over year.
From 2023.
It's still down 38% from 2019 levels, but start to see some inventory come on.
So do you think this is more higher mortgage rates finally having an impact? Or do you think it's just people can only hold out for so long until they have to put their house on the market? A little bit of both?
A little bit of both. There's a home in my neighborhood that just sold for $1.2 million. And I don't even know what to say. You would not believe what this house looks like. It's a fine house. It's a high ranch, which is the type of house that I grew up in, where you walk up the steps, you open the door. There's a downstairs with one bedroom and a living room.
Is this the one you were talking about a few weeks ago, like a month ago?
No, it's different. This is the type of house I grew up in. You go upstairs, there's one bathroom, master bedroom, bedroom attached, kitchen right there.
It's a normal house.
It's a normal house. It's probably, I don't know, 2,300 square feet. Like it's a fine house, but $1.2 million. It's been 2 years of this. I feel horrible for new home buyers. These people could be underwater forever. And I guess it doesn't really matter because they're not like reselling it, but just the prices that people, where does the money come from? How are people buying houses?
I did the Zillow thing in Marco again because it just fascinates me. I wanted to like see what the house, the Airbnb we're staying at. It's 1,700 square feet. It's one floor and it's in a great spot. There's a pool and it's right on the water. but the house is, it's a rental and it's got some age, but it's, we're like millions of dollars. It's like, it's crazy. And I look at some of these and I think about if you bought a home here, you know, 5 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, you won the lottery.
Yeah.
It's, and it happened in a lot of cities too.
So if you own a home, you're good, right? Because you've got all this equity. But again, new home buyers just got royally f***ed.
And I don't think there's any, I don't think there's anything that's going to level that playing field.
Yeah. So like when I graduated college during the GFC, we got a raw deal because the labor market was just brutal.
Yes.
And now this generation is taking it on the chin with real estate. Really, really, really rough.
Yes. So it's like, yes, I have a job. I make more money. The thing I've seen, I think Connor Sen tweeted this, is saying like, what are the spending habits of these young people going to be? If they have a better job than millennials had back then, maybe this is why you're seeing crazy speculation and stuff and more travel and all this kind of things, because what else are they going to spend their money on if they can't, right, if they're priced out of a house?
Right, because younger people definitely have more disposable income than we did. There's no doubt about that.
As a young person, think about who you're competing with to buy houses. Baby boomers who probably are paying all cash, in older millennials who have a ton of home equity built in already. You can't win that game.
Yeah, yeah. All right, credit card junkie, did you get it?
Robinhood new credit card. I put my name on the list. I got to check it out at least. So they said 3% cash back on everything, 5% through Robinhood Travel, which is like, the travel sites on the credit cards are just, they're not good. Any of them, right? I feel like you don't get deals, you get more points, but I feel like booking travel through the credit card companies is rarely a good deal. Mm. Unless you really care about those points. You have to be a Robinhood Gold member, so it's $5 a month. I think the money goes right into your brokerage account. But I think this is actually pretty good timing on their part, because it seems like the deals for credit cards have kind of waned in recent years. I think this is actually pretty good timing on their part. I think it's not a bad time to do it. Did you sign up for it?
No, I have enough credit cards. I'm good.
I do too, but I can't help myself. I got way too much credit.
All right. I've got some good news. Okay. This is from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. The median wealth gap for never married adults, so never married men versus never married women, has shrunk to the narrowest since, I don't know, this data goes back to 1989.
Wow, so there was that increase in net worth for women. Holy cow.
Median, yeah, there was a monster spike for women, for single women specifically. Not sure, exactly sure what's driving this, but definitely good news.
But this, okay, I was thinking about this. Is this because women live longer than men? But this is never married. That's a massive spike. That 2019 to 2022 period.
Yeah, this is on me. I should have read the article. I put the link in. I forgot to read the article. Sorry about that.
No, but no, it's the chart kind of says it all though. But this period, this 2020 to 2023, 2022 period is going to stand out on so many levels in the future. I feel like they're going to be looking back at this period for decades to come and being like, what happened back then?
Oh, the world changed. This is COVID is COVID the biggest watershed moment of our lives?
I'd say 9/11, but COVID's going to be close. I guess you could say COVID.
No. I think COVID changed.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, you're right. I thought it was 9/11, and I thought it was a great financial crisis. It probably is COVID in terms of like it really the path.
There's a clear line of demarcation. There's a before COVID. There's a before COVID and after COVID. All right, Ben. I told you that I've been doing some shopping lately. New shirt, not to brag.
You spend less than $170 on it, I hope?
Don't worry about what I spent.
I do worry. I'm going to become your personal shopper and help you not spend so much money.
So I don't know any. So I shopped at Bloomingdale's, as I said. My wife's like, "You're so weird. Why are you buying clothes at Bloomingdale's?" I was like, "Where else should I be buying clothes?" She's like, "I don't know. Not here." And I don't know any of the brands that I'm buying, but. Anyhow,
it so does I got seem like it seemed like such a boomer move to go to the mall and go to Bloomingdale's. I'm sorry to generationally tag you.
So what I did was I cleaned up my closet. And I'm not quite sure what took me so long. And I learned a few things. 90% of my clothes that I bought from 2010 to 2020 were Gap.
Okay.
Everything. T-shirts, jeans, hoodies. Everything was Gap. I don't know what I was waiting for. Like, I have socks from 2010 that I don't even wear anymore.
I probably once every 6 months, I clean my closet out and take a big garbage bag stuff to Goodwill.
Yeah, so I did that. Felt
if I
good.
Don't wear it anymore or whatever. Yeah.
And I had a few like, I kind of like the shirt, but I was like, but here's my rule. If I haven't worn it in 5 years, goodbye. What am I doing? Why am I hoarding shirts?
5 years, that's a long time. I would say like anything over 12 months, you got to get rid of it. Unless it's like something you're going to wear to a specific event.
Oh, 12 months. Oh, that's interesting. So you probably spend 10 times as much as I do on clothes in a given year.
Yes, but I spend like 30% of what you spend on an individual item though. So I can get more of, my money can go further than you.
I'm going to guess I definitely spend less than $1,000 in clothes a year, like in the last 10 years, for sure.
I'm way over that. I like buying clothes. I got a question for you. Who's the sucker here? Because I, for this Airbnb, I went to the store, I got my own, I went to Publix here, which is the, you know, the every city in Florida, I think, has a Publix, right?
Or my grandfather worked at Publix in the 70s. I come from a line of blue-collar workers. We use our hands, Ben.
I do too. You know the Brunswick bowling pins? My grandfather worked for them, making bowling pins.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm. All right. 3-in-1. I got a 3-in-1 shampoo, conditioner, body wash, like a Suave, $2 or something. So who's the sucker? The people who buy them individually, the body wash, the shampoo, and the conditioner separately, or the people who are buying the cheapo one that's all together like me? Who's the sucker? Someone has to be the sucker there. Because it seems to work fine.
I'm going to say the individual buyers, but I got to be honest. I miss conditioner.
Yeah.
I really do. I used to have beautiful long hair, Ben, and it all fell out.
I've seen the picture. You have like long, flowing, kind of curly-ish. I think you should grow the sides out. I think you should just do it. I really,
that's the I really want to see
you.
Ever.
I really want to see you with a Larry David.
Maybe in 30 years, but I do miss conditioner. Those were good times.
A bunch of people emailed us. You asked, how do they shorten shirt sleeves at a tailor? And a bunch of people, I'd say 25% of the people said they take the cuff off and they cut it there. And then there was 75% said, no, they cut it off at the shoulder and short it that way. So I'm going to take the people who said shoulder.
Oh, interesting. Because I saw the this first, people that cut like the, what is this thing called?
The cuff, right?
The cuff. Yeah. Anyway, the more you know. All right, Ben, this is from Jim Bianco. He's tweeted, fun chart. 50, by the way, I put that video, the Lake Michigan video on my Instagram and I got on my personal Instagram and I never put animal spirit stuff on my personal Instagram, at least like videos. And I got so much feedback. Apparently Holmes, which is the acronym for the Great Lakes, is the one thing that everybody retained from elementary school.
Except you.
I remember it, but at the heat of the moment.
Oh.
And like everybody was like, you don't remember Holmes? I was like, it was on camera. I got flustered. Although the Erie River was funny. I did laugh at that.
That was good.
All right. So anyhow, so Jim Bianco tweeted, fun chart. 50% of the U.S. population lives in blue counties. 50% of the U.S. population lives in the orange counties. And there's 100...
Grand Rapids made it into the blue. I'm on the blue.
Which one are you? You're on the West Coast?
It's Detroit and Grand Rapids, yeah.
And there's 148 blue counties and 2,998 orange counties.
All right.
Unbelievable.
If you want cheap housing, go to the orange.
Somebody sent us an email about the Midwest surge, and we're going to get to that next week. Ben, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I saw. I was like, huh, you know what? Yeah, that's true. The company that owns Jack Daniels, Brown-Forman, not doing so hot. And it was, you know, nobody drinks Jack Daniels anymore. Isn't that true?
Oh, that's because people want the high-end, like whiskey drinking is like a new, that's a new
but
thing,
if you're,
bourbon.
Yeah, I'll take the Woodford Reserve.
You know, I was always a Jim Beam. I was always a Jim Beam guy myself.
I was a Evan Williams guy.
Oh, Evan Williams is the worst. That's
told you I was blue collar.
Awful. I mean, I did. I drank Jim Beam when I wanted to make some bad decisions in college. But Evan Williams was brutal.
But Jack and Coke used to be the thing.
Oh, that's
used to be the drink.
Jack and Coke was. It's just an easy. That's true.
That
so
was
that's not a thing
go
anymore,
to the
huh?
bar. Jack and Coke. But we've all become liquor snobs.
I actually like Jack and Coke.
I love Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, whiskey makers, But whiskey also is in trouble. This is from the journal. Whiskey makers' revenue in the U.S. fell 2.2% in 2023 to $12.3 billion.
Oh, everyone drinks tequila now.
So here we go. U.S. case volume sales by category. Tequila is so hot right now. Oh, this is interesting. Number behind tequila is cordials. What would even be in that category? Isn't that like after dinner drinks?
Is it like a Tom Collins?
No, that's a cocktail. No, a cordial is like a liqueur, like a Frangelico.
Isn't Tom Collins like a liqueur?
No, Tom Collins is a type of drink.
The only thing I know Tom Collins from is Meet the Parents. Oh, we're all Tom Collins mix. Gotta go to the store.
Tom Collins, I don't know if that's sour mix. You know, I don't think I ever told you this story. I went to bartending school. I took like a course.
Seriously?
Told you. Listen, I'm a blue collar guy. I had all of these jobs. Waiter, busboy.
Hey, I
caddy,
was a busboy. Busboy's the worst.
Valet Parker for years. Wait, what was the worst?
Busboy. Because the waiters and waitresses screw you out of tips. They're supposed to give you a percentage of their tips. They never give you enough.
I was a busboy at a catering hall. Not a great job. Not a great job. Anyway, I wasn't able to get a job. I got the certification.
Oh, no.
Never put it to use. I did get a job one time in Long Beach, actually. And I did. I poured some beers and the guy never invited me back.
Okay. All right. Someone's going to have to email us on what cordials means because I'm drawing a blank here. All
Cognac's right. Taking it on the chin. Nobody's drinking cognac anymore or rum.
All right. So I have the perfect Miami Vice. I think about this. I wrote a blog post last week. Like the alternative to a 60-40 could be a 60-30-10. Okay? So the perfect Miami Vice is 60-30-10. 60%.
Wait, hold on. 60%.
60% strawberry daiquiri. 30% pina colada. 10% floater.
I'm with you.
That's a perfect Miami Vice.
Yeah.
I've had a couple. I'm having another one today. Did I ever send you to Stilts on the water?
Stilts.
I don't remember. Right on the water. Okay. All right. Recommendations. They had Manchester by the Sea on the Rewatchables last week. And this is a movie that I heard from dozens of people saying, do not see this movie. It's way too sad. If you're a parent, never see this movie. And I all right, you know what? I don't want to be depressed. I don't like to watch depressing movies.
I do. But
I finally watched it because I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a try. I know going in, I already knew what the bad part was, that how it's going to be so sad. Kids dying. That's the worst thing in the world. The movie was way more like lighthearted than I thought for as much death as that was in the movie. It was a really good movie.
Great movie.
I don't think I'd ever watch it again. It's a very good movie.
It's a one and done for me.
Casey Affleck is very good. So is Michelle Williams. All right. I already mentioned The Fish That Ate the Whale. I got nothing else.
All right. I on the way out to Colorado last week, we took a 7:30 flight, which is really dumb. I was up at 4:30. It was just horrible. And I say all that to say, maybe I was tired when I fired this up, but I tried to watch Ferrari and I just really didn't care for it. Now, in fairness, I only saw 20 minutes. I was tired, blah, blah. Did you see Ferrari? Is it good? Do I need to try it again?
I've decided to, I'm against any Adam Driver movie where he has an Italian accent, because the other one was bad too. What was the Gucci one?
Oh, The House of Gucci? I didn't see that.
Did he have
But, you know, Michael
Italian
Mann.
Accent? Yeah. Okay.
All right. Listeners, if you love that movie, let me know. I took Kobe to see Godzilla and Kong.
Okay. My son Jordan wants to see it so bad. Okay.
He loved it.
What did you
loved
think?
Loved it.
How many can they make? Because I feel like everyone was exactly the same.
Oh, it was pretty bad.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But it wasn't for me. And it was, you know, it was entertaining enough, but it was pretty rotten. But I was reminded of Godzilla Minus One, like, how come they're able to make such great movies and now we're a Hollywood big monster? I mean, it was just junk.
Okay. Oh, I did try one. I made it through a half hour of the new Roadhouse the other night. Garbage. Just garbage.
No, but intentional garbage.
But the fight scenes didn't seem real. It's like they used CGI in the fight scenes. I loved it.
When I say loved it, I had a great time. Listen, any movie that takes place in the Caribbean, I'm automatically.
That's true. It was in Key West. No, it was not the Caribbean. It was Key West.
Well, so you know what I mean. Same thing. So actually, Roadhouse has attracted 50. This is from Sportico. 50 million worldwide viewers on Prime Video over its first 2 weeks. It is Amazon MGM Studios' most watched produced film debut ever.
Do you know why these streaming numbers are so huge when new movies come out and they say like this is the most streamed movie in history? because there's no new movies that come out anymore. So everyone watches new stuff. Everyone wants to watch a new movie because there's no new good movies barely. That's why this stuff gets streamed so much.
It's mostly accurate.
There are still good movies, but it's such a lower percentage than it used to be.
True. All right, last thing. On the rewatchables this week, they have a movie called Shot Caller.
Never even
heard of it. And they're talking about, I'm like, how have I never heard of this movie? Let me read you this description. Tell me if you're in, or tell me if you think that I would be in.
Okay.
A California stockbroker is arrested and charged for a fatal DUI accident, and on his lawyer's advice, takes a plea deal, which sees him sentenced to 16 months in prison. While incarcerated, he becomes involved with a violent white supremacist gang.
Okay. I thought maybe he was going to be giving out stock tips in prison, but okay, that's a... I don't know.
I'm in.
I'll watch all of these. Sure. I've honestly never heard of it before.
Neither. I'm in for that. All right, Ben. Did we go long? It's hard to tell. We had a break in the action during this episode. Listeners can't tell because of our wonderful production team, but we had some internet issues.
All right.
And they were it was on my end. It was on my end, not Ben's.
That's true. I'm pretty good here. Decent internet in Florida. I'm going to go have some lunch on the beach. Probably have a Miami Vice. And that's it. Pool Enjoy. Later. Thank you.
Enjoy yourself. All right. Animal Spirits Pod at thecompoundnews.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.